we were making our way into 1 Samuel chapter 10, so you can just make your way over there as we have been making our way through Saul being ordained as king, the people wanting their own king, looking around the other nations and desired a king, and Samuel reluctantly, but of course after God told him, go ahead and give it to him, that's what they want, Saul was going to be the first king of Israel. But Samuel would develop a relationship with King Saul and actually come to love him. But of course, what was his main hope? And his main hope was that he was going to follow God and lead his people on the right path. In 1 Samuel chapter 10, again, Samuel comes over, took a flask of oil, poured it on his head, and kissed him, and said, "Is it not because the Eternal has anointed you commander over his inheritance? When you have departed from me today, you will find two men by Rachel's tomb in the territory of Benjamin at Zelzah. And they will say to you, 'The donkeys which you went to look for have been found.'" Remember, he was going around looking for the donkeys that had been lost. And he's telling them now they were found. "And now your father has ceased caring about the donkeys, as in he's worrying about you, saying, 'What shall I do about my son?'" Well, guess what? His son is now the king. "Then you shall go forward from there and come to the terebinth tree of Tabor. Three men will going up to God at Bethel will meet you, one carrying three young goats, another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a skin of wine. And they will greet you and give you two loaves of bread, which you shall receive from their hands. After that, you shall come to the hill of God, where the Philistine garrison is. And it will happen, when you have come there to the city, that you will meet a group of prophets coming down from the high place with a stringed instrument." Now, this high place is different than the other high places. This is a high place that's a good high place, so that the prophets are coming down. "They'll have stringed instruments, tambourines, and a flute, and a harp before them, and they'll be prophesying. Then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you." Okay, again, this is how it would happen with some people. Okay, this is a time when there is no baptism. God's Spirit would come upon a person. And unfortunately, with Saul, God would later on remove his spirit. It was also the same way with David. David did not go and get baptized, you know, and God's Spirit was given to him, and he knew he had God's Spirit. So, and then Saul, in turn, would prophesy with them and be turned into another man. So Samuel's saying, this has never happened to you before, Saul. So when it does happen, here's what you're supposed to do. So you're going to now turn around and prophesy. You're going to be different. How was he going to be different? God was going to instill prophetic knowledge to him so that he in turn could prophesy. And we'll see how this is going to impact people when he begins to do it in just a moment. So, verse 7, "And let it be when these signs come to you that you do as the occasion demands, for God is with you." So here, right from the start, Samuel is telling, listen, follow God. Okay? Stay close. God is with you, Saul. Don't go to the left or the right. So when those signs come to you, that you do as the occasion demands, for God is with you. "You shall go down before me to Gilgal. And surely I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and make sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait till I come to you and show you what you should do." So what do we have here, brethren? We have a directive given by God's servant to the king, and he's asking him to do what? Obey what I'm saying. So here's his first opportunity to follow through with God's Spirit working with him and to lead the people. Again, these are things Saul had never done before. Okay? It was the same way with David. David came from the sheepfolds. David would also be introduced to things that he had never done before. But what was the difference? We have two different hearts working here. Okay? And we're going to watch them manifest themselves as we read along today. So, here's how it began. Verse 9. So it was when he had turned his back to go from Samuel that God gave him another heart. Showing what? God saying, okay, I'm willing to work with you, Saul. He didn't want Saul to fail. Okay, Samuel had told the people, you know, the nature of man. But God also knew that no man was perfect. And man had an opportunity to abide in him and go the right way. So God says, look, I'm willing. He didn't say put Saul up to fail. Remember, these are his people, God's people. He wants his people to what? Prosper. Even though they said, look, we want ourselves a king that we can see. So God gives him another heart. And all those signs came to pass that day. When they came there to the hill, there was the group of prophets to meet him. Then the Spirit of God came upon him. And then Saul prophesied among them. And it happened when all who knew him formerly. Now, this is akin to what? Okay, let's say before God called you, you used to roll with your buddies on the job, in the office or whatever. And then God calls you. You respond, and little by little, you begin to change and grow. You learn about repentance and change, and in a matter of time, people are going to say, you know what? We still like you and everything, but you're not the same person. And you say to yourself, good. I'm glad somebody else sees that I'm not the same person, because I'm not. God didn't want me to remain the same person. So God came upon him. He prophesied to them. This stunned those who knew the old Saul. Hey, we know who Saul is. Saul used to be like this. And this guy is prophesying. So they said to one another, what is this that has come upon the son of Kish? Like they would say to you, what is it with you that now every Saturday you go to the church, that every year you pack up and go to this, what do you call it again, feast? What is it about? You didn't used to do those things. Those who formerly knew what? The old you. So they're saying, who is this guy? Obviously they didn't recognize God's Spirit. It wasn't working with them. So they're dumbfounded here. Is Saul also among the prophets? Again, this is something Saul has never done before. So, as some people will do, brethren, when you begin to change, and some of those people remember what? Your past habits, your past ways, they're not going to think you're real. They're going to wait for the other shoe to drop. Come on. You used to like, you know, dirty jokes. You used to tell them. We used to sit around the water cooler and, you know, trade jabs. You don't do that anymore. What's wrong with you? Come on, you're just putting me on, aren't you? Come on. I got the joke. Now, come on, be like you used to be. And you say, I'm not like that anymore. So they're thinking he's playing, he's messing around, he's not being genuine. Verse 12, then a man from there answered and said, but who is their father? Therefore it became a proverb, is Saul also among the prophets? And when he had finished prophesying, he went to the high place. Then his uncle found him in verse 14. And he said, "Where did you go?" So he said, "To look for the donkeys." When we saw that they were nowhere to be found, we went to Samuel. And Saul's uncle said, "Tell me, please, what Samuel said to you." So Saul told his uncle. He told us plainly that the donkeys had been found, but about the matter of the kingdom, he didn't tell him. So he didn't tell him he was king. He kept that to himself. Verse 17. Then Samuel called the people together to the Lord at Mizpah and said to the children of Israel, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought up Israel out of Egypt and delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of all the kingdoms and from those who oppressed you. But you have today rejected your God." I mean, he's publicly telling people, here's what you did. You decided I wasn't to be your God anymore or your king. Here's what you decided. You've rejected me, who himself saved you from all your adversities and your tribulations. And you have said to him, "No, set a king over us." Now, therefore, present yourselves before the Eternal by the tribes and by your clans. And when Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near, the tribe of Benjamin was chosen. When he had caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near by their families, the family of Matri was chosen. And Saul, the son of Kish, was chosen. But guess what? He wasn't there. So in essence, he knew what was supposed to happen. And it was time in the families of Benjamin, and he's nowhere to be found. What happened to him? Verse 22, so they went to God and asked, "Where is he? Has the man come here yet?" And God answered, "There he is, hidden among the equipment." So he's hiding. So God said, "Look, Saul, I'm with you. Why are you hiding?" He's hiding from his responsibility. So they ran, verse 23, and brought him from there. And when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upward. And Samuel said to all the people, "Do you see him whom the Lord has chosen, that there is no one like him among all the people?" So all the people shouted and said, "Long live the king!" Then Samuel explained to the people the behavior of royalty, wrote it in a book, and laid it up before the Eternal. And Samuel went and sent all the people away, every man to his house. And Saul also went home to Gibeah, and valiant men went with him, whose hearts God had touched. See, God is still functioning, isn't he, brethren? Even after all this, he's still working with his people. But then there were some who weren't on the same page. Verse 27, but some rebels said, "Hey, who's the tall guy? There's no way he's going to deliver us. How can this man save us?" So they despised him. Okay, they despised him. And brought him no presents, as what the culture was in that day. Now Saul was wise here. He held his peace. Remember, when you're the king, what comes with that? Authority. Power. But he's still learning, so he didn't do anything to the people. He held his peace. At this moment in time, brethren, it's obvious to see there's still factionalism between the tribes. They're still not unified. And so you have people who oppose Saul. They don't like this. Maybe they had someone, they wish somebody, you know, from Gad. What's wrong with our guys? They could be the king. Or, you know, Reuben. We got some really great guys here. So there was some opposition there. Just as God said there would be. There competition, strife, it was all there, as we see today in our world around us. We have Saul now moving to action here in 1 Samuel chapter 11. 1 Samuel chapter 11. Then Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said to Nahash, "Make a covenant with us, and we will serve you." And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, "On this condition I will make a covenant with you, that I may put out all your right eyes." I don't think I'd go for that. You going to put out my right eye? I can put out all your right eyes and bring reproach on all Israel. Then the elders of Jabesh said to him, "Hold off for 7 days, that we may send messengers to all the territory of Israel. And then, if there is no one to save us, we will come out to you." So the messengers came to Gibeah of Saul and told the news in the hearing of the people. And just as we've seen so many times, brethren, all the way back to when they came out of Egypt, when there was oppression, the people did what? They cried. There was no faith. They just said, "It's all over." Here again, all the people lifted up their voices and wept. Now there was Saul, verse 5, coming behind the herd from the field, and Saul said, "What's wrong with the people? Why is everybody crying?" And they told him the words of the men of Jabesh. And then God's Spirit moved on Saul. See, God, His Spirit, again, and it's very important we understand that. It's very similar to Samson. Remember, the Spirit of God would come upon Samson and he would beat up everybody, everything, you know. But then God removed His Spirit from him and he became weak. This is very similar to what's happening with Saul. When he was doing something right, God's Spirit would come on him. And Saul, upon hearing the news, got angry. It was greatly aroused, we're told. So he took a yoke of oxen and cut them in pieces and sent them throughout all the territory of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, "Whoever does not go out with Saul and Samuel to battle, so it shall be done to his oxen." And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. When he numbered them at Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. And they said to the messengers who came, "Thus you shall say to the men of Jabesh-Gilead, 'Tomorrow by the time the sun is hot, you shall have help.'" Then the messengers came and reported it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad, because they're saying, "Hey, we're not going to lose our right eye. We're not going to put our eyes out now. We're going to get some help." Therefore the men of Jabesh said, "Tomorrow we will come out to you, and you may do with us whatever seems good to you." So Saul at this time is a man of action. Okay, this is the king's first military engagement. Verse 11, so it was on the next day. Saul put the people in three companies. Again, remember, he's doing things he's never done before. How is he able to do this? The Spirit of God is on him. God's working with him. Okay, he wasn't a military guy. Okay, so he's learning. So he puts the people in three companies. They came into the midst of the camp in the morning watch and killed Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it happened that those who survived were scattered so that no two of them were left together. It's a tremendous slaughter. Verse 12, then the people said to Samuel, "Who is he who said, 'Shall Saul reign over us?' Bring them in." Remember, these are the rebels. Remember, these are the ones who said, "We don't want, who's this guy? We don't want him to reign." They remembered them. And now after this great victory, "Bring those guys here that we may put them to death." Again, Saul being very wise. Verse 13, Not a man shall be put to death this day, as far as the Israelite people. For today, the Eternal has accomplished salvation in Israel. What did that do to the people? Brought them together. Brought them together. Then Samuel said to the people, "Come, let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there." See, what are we seeing, family? Saul started out, he was a good king. Starting out, what did he have? He was humble. He listened. He got counsel. When they went out, he said, "Me and Samuel are going out." He wanted that help from Samuel. You know, he made a distinction where someone said, "They made me mad, kill all my enemies." He said, "No, nobody's going to die today." He started out being a very good king. So all the people, verse 15, went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. There they made sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord, and there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. So, wow, okay. We're really moving in the right direction, aren't we? Now, during this time, remember what John the Baptist said when Jesus Christ came on the scene? He said, "I must decrease. He must increase." Samuel knows he is God's servant, but Samuel is not the king. So he realizes, you know, I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. Let the king come up. God's working with him. And you guys see the king. He was willing to do that. He was that type of man. He was humble in that way. So he's wanting to begin to diminish a little bit now that Saul's the king. So he says again to all Israel, 1 Samuel chapter 12 now, "Indeed, I have heeded your voice in all that you said to me," regarding they wanted a king, "and have made a king over you. And now, here is your king, walking before you. And I am old and gray-headed. And look, my sons are with you. I have walked before you from my childhood to this day." All the way back to Eli when he was a little boy. And now we've come forward all the way. He says, "Now, you know, I'm old. And my days are numbered." But he has something to say to the people. Verse 3, "Here I am, witness against me before the Lord and before his anointed, whose ox have I taken, or whose donkey have I taken, or whom have I cheated, whom have I oppressed, or from whose hand have I received any bribe with which to blind my eyes? I will restore it to you." And of course, nobody said anything. "No, Sam, you don't do anything like that." And they said, "You have not cheated us. You've not oppressed us. You've not stolen anything from any man's hand." Then he said to them, "Then the Lord is witness against you, and his anointed is witness this day that you have not found anything in my hand." And they answered, "He is a witness. You haven't done anything wrong, Samuel." Then he said to the people, now he gives an overview of what has happened. "It is the Eternal who raised up Moses and Aaron and who brought your fathers up out of the land of Egypt. Now, therefore, stand still that I may reason with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous acts of the Lord, which he did to you and your fathers." That's why he prefaced it with what he said earlier. In other words, he said, "We find no fault with you." So, having said that, Samuel's going to say, "Now here's what you ought to do since you found no fault with me. You know I'm not out here trying to cheat you or steal anything from you." So he says, "Please listen to what I have to say now regarding, you know, what God is doing." Verse 9, "And when they forgot the Eternal their God He sold them into the hand of Sisera, commander of the army of Hazor, into the hand of the Philistines, and into the hand of the king of Moab, and they fought against them. Then they cried out to the Lord and said, "We have sinned because we have forsaken the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths." So Samuel is basically now rehearsing the time of the judges. Remember, they had some good judges. They had some terrible judges. You know, when the judges were bad, the people ran amok. They sinned openly, and they began to worship false gods. So he's rehearsing that with them. So then they would cry out, "But now deliver us from the hand of our enemies, and we will serve you," saying that to God. Verse 11, "And the Lord sent Jerubbabel, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel, and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and you dwelt in safety. And when you saw that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, came against you, you said to me, 'No, but a king shall reign over us,' when the Lord your God was your king." He said, you already had a king. He said, if you'd come to me and say, "We need help," I'd have petitioned God, and God would have fought for us. That didn't happen. You wanted a king. You have a king. Verse 13. "Now therefore, here is the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired. And take note, the Eternal has set a king over you." And there's that big two-letter word, brethren, verse 14. If you fear the Eternal and serve Him and obey His voice and do not rebel against the commandments of the Eternal, then both you and the king. See, God puts it all together. He says, if you obey me, I'll bless you and your king. You'll prosper. Look at the love that God has for his people. He said, even though you rejected me, okay, from being your king, hold to my word. Hold to the law. And I'll still bless you. And I'll bless your king to boot, the one who reigns over you, if you continue to follow the Lord your God. However, that's the other big word. However, if you do not obey the voice of the Eternal, but rebel against the commandment of the Eternal, then the hand of the Lord will be against you as it was against your fathers. Now, therefore, stand and see this great thing which the Lord will do before your eyes. Is today not the wheat harvest? Now, when is the wheat harvest, family? When was the wheat harvest? Around Pentecost. That's when the wheat harvest was. Late spring. Around this time, there is little to no rain. So Samuel asked God for a miracle. "I will call to the Eternal, and he will send thunder and rain, that you may perceive and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord in asking a king for yourselves." So Samuel called to the Lord and said, "God, thunder and rain." And he sent thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. But what happened, brethren? They forgot. They forgot. Samuel prayed, asked God to do it, God did it. The people said, "Whoa, that's really scary." A couple days later, I wonder if that was God or not. Maybe he knew there was a thunderstorm coming. Well, you know, human reasoning took over. But for the moment, they were afraid. And they respected God. Verse Verse 19. And all the people said to Samuel, "Pray for your servants to the Lord your God that we may not die. For we have added to our sins the evil of asking a king for ourselves." So at that moment, they got it. They said, "We see we really messed up. We were selfish. We thought we had it all. We thought we have our own king. We'll prosper. But we see now we had a king. So please don't allow us to die. We'll believe you. We'll keep your commandments." So Samuel said to the people in verse 20, "Do not fear. You have done all this wickedness. Yet do not turn aside." Okay? Do not turn aside from following the eternal. Again, a great example for us, brethren. At those moments when we do fall and we do sin, when we repent, do we get up and don't follow God anymore? "Oh, I've messed up enough. He doesn't want me," and walk away? No, you repent, ask God's forgiveness, and you start following him again, don't you? He said, "I'm going to go to the end. I'm going to endure to the end." It's exactly what he wants the people to do here. Follow the eternal. Serve him with all your heart. Do not turn aside, for then you would go after empty things which cannot profit or deliver, for they are nothing. Empty things like what? Idolatry. Which they were going to fall headlong into again. "For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you his people." He said, "I'm happy." He loved being their king. He loves being their God. Verse 23, "Moreover, as for me," Samuel now speaking of himself, "far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you." See, saying, if I stopped, if I had an attitude, if I was bitter because I'm diminishing and I didn't like it because, you know, you don't really respect me like you should. He said, I could get an attitude, I could be ugly and not pray for you. He said, but I'd be sinning too, because I know you're God's people also, and I'm supposed to pray for you. What does the Bible tell us, brother? Pray for who? Your enemies. Okay? Pray for those who what? Spitefully use you. Okay? Samuel knew. "But I will teach you," he says, "the good and the right way." What would be the sin for him not to pray? It would be the sin of omission, for refusal to pray for the people. Verse 24, "Only fear the Lord, serve him in truth with all your heart, for consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king," he says. It is often said, brethren, people generally get the type of leadership they deserve. And for a while, they had a good king. Then as they begin to kind of sway and not follow God, and, you know, then they would get kings that they didn't want to obey and follow God, and then began to change. Let's start 1 Samuel 13. We probably won't finish it, but we'll get started here. Saul reigned 1 year. And when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in the mountains of Bethel. And 1,000 were for his son Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. The rest of the people he sent away, every man to his tent. Why? I don't know. I don't know. But this is what he did. Now, his son Jonathan He's a young guy. A little adventurous. Not afraid, very bold. And we're going to see this come out in just a moment when they engage the Philistines. Jonathan, verse 3, attacked the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba. The Philistines heard of it. See, this is something, again, Jonathan would like to take initiative. You know, element of surprise. That's what I think about when I think about Jonathan. He goes in, he only has 1,000. Dad's got 2,000. He's only got 1,000. And he goes and he does something very daring, showing courage. In the meantime, Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." Now all Israel heard it, said that Saul had attacked the garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel had also become an abomination. In layman's terms, they stunk. That's what it is. You're an abomination, you have a stench, you stink. That's what they're saying to the Philistines. And the people were called together to Saul at Gilgal. Then the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel, and they came with 30,000 chariots. Remember, Israel is not a well-organized army material-wise. Okay? You don't see, and Saul came down with his 20,000 chariots because they didn't have any. Okay? They are still behind. Which again shows why God said, look, you don't need all that material. I'll fight your battle for you. So here they come. They've got iron chariots and 6,000 horsemen and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and encamped at Michmash to the east of Beth-Aven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in the caves, in the thickets, in rocks, in holes, and in pits. They said, look at this army. We got to get out of here. So they hid themselves. Some even crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, now again, brethren, look at the leadership here. Jonathan has already attacked the garrison. Saul's got the main force. The people are a little distressed. You saw this army coming with chariots. What are they looking for? Leadership. Come on, king. What are you going to do? He's still in Gilgal. All the people followed him trembling. Come on, guys, let's go. Oh, no. We're going to die. Oh, they're trembling. Jonathan had 1,000 less and went after it. These guys are trembling. This was a time for what? Leadership. You know, Samuel told Saul what was going to happen back in 1 Samuel 10. We now begin to see something different about Saul. Saul is beginning to break down. Okay? Remember, he's the people's king. This is the guy who hid. They had to go get him and bring him up. Here, stand here. You're the king. Now it's time for leadership. What happened to calling on God? Notice also Samuel's not around. First, he loses his patience, and then he takes upon himself the authority of the religious representative. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're the king. Lead your men. You're supposed to be the general. Why are you going to be doing a priestly duty? That's not what you're supposed to do. Nobody said that when you were ordained. But this is what he's doing. He took to himself something that was not his responsibility. He waited 7 days, according to the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal. The people were scattered from him. And Saul's sitting there thinking, well, if he ain't going to do it, I guess I've got to do it. So he reasons within himself. Again, why don't you go to God? But we see the pattern, don't we, brethren? Was that his propensity to go to God? No. So, must I go do this? He said, bring the burnt offering and peace offering here to me. So they did. And he offered the burnt offering. Now, it happened as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, Samuel showed up. Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And the first words out of Samuel's mouth was, what have you done? And that's a good place to stop for our next Bible study. We will find out what Saul had done and what God had decreed. So thank you for coming out to staying for the Bible study this afternoon, brethren. And we'll pick up here next time. And as Samuel gives an overview to what happened and now what God's going to do to the rule of King Saul. Have a great afternoon.